Hello and welcome to Masterclass Module 2, Functional Testing. In this workbook, we're going to be discussing when to do lab tests and why, as well as the recommended test for the GAPS person. So where do we start? Sometimes our health issues can be so numerous and complex that even after doing GAPS for a while, we don't know where to start or continue. So if you've been on GAPS for a while and you're still struggling, here's some information about where to go next. The more that we continue in the unhealthy paradigm we're currently a part of, the sicker the population is becoming. Dr. Natasha is seeing more and more challenging cases as compared to even 5 or 10 years ago. And from what I gather, we GAPS practitioners are experiencing the same. Traditionally, it's been easier to see great improvement in children's health quickly. But even children are presenting with tougher case histories. To make matters worse, if one has been living with processed foods, imbalanced blood sugar, drugs and vaccines, surgeries, toxins from foods in the environment, personal care products, etc., for 20, 40, even 50 plus years, the damage is more complex and takes longer to rectify. Just as an unhealthy plant invites more pests, so too do our sick bodies invite more pathogens. In this module, we're going to attempt to simplify what is inherently complex and work on prioritizing. So, functional lab tests. Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride does not recommend testing from the beginning of the GAPS protocol. She recommends giving the protocol a full year to do its strengthening, nourishing work. Briefly, I want to consider why it is beneficial to delay testing, but I also want to talk about the reasons for testing. Let's talk about the case for not testing at first. Number one, testing is cost prohibitive. My clients are frequently putting out $500 to $800 just for tests. I'm a researcher by nature and would love to do every test available to me, but unfortunately, this level of testing is out of financial reach for many. Number two, testing is based on today's science, which is continually evolving and never complete. Testing should always be viewed within the context of a person's health history and physical observation. Number three, testing is secondary to the personal approach. Talking with a person, listening, observing, and examining is where it begins. I find that an extensive amount of time listening to a client's health history is what really initiates the healing process. And number four, testing is limited to a metabolic snapshot. Your metabolism changes continually, so it's wise to learn to listen to your body, for only your body can navigate the many complex intricacies and calculations of what it needs from day to day, even hour to hour. Once you get the refined sugar, the processed food, and the toxic cravings removed, it's time to listen to your body. And there's always room for adaptation and variation, even in a diet like GAPS. There are many factors which influence what your body needs. For example, heredity and constitution, anabolic and catabolic cycles, which happen daily, seasonal, as needed, parasympathetic and sympathetic dominance, acid-alkaline balance, energy production sources switching between glucose and fats, hormonal shifts, and water and electrolyte balance. So now let me lay out the case for testing. All of the above doesn't mean testing is of no value. To quote Dr. Natasha, testing is a very helpful tool, but it needs to be used with precision and good reason. So some of the reasons to consider testing are as follows. Number one is my approach to client work. If you want to start your GAPS protocol with a plan that is individualized to you and have your healing sped up. For example, those of my clients who combine stool testing and the MRT food sensitivity test to avoid even their GAPS food sensitivities, have an easier time on GAPS intro and beyond and see improvements faster because they have a GAPS protocol that's specific to them. Number two, if you've been on the protocol for about a year and there are lingering issues that you are unsure of, every person is unique and has their own set of circumstances and health history. Some of us have been sick longer than others and need some additional assistance. Following the GAPS protocol for a year gives the body nutrients and strength that it needs before attending to deeper issues. It also allows time for the body to go through the cycles of die-off and detox, which can bring symptoms of their own, as well as worsening current symptoms for a time. Dr. Natasha recommends giving nature a chance. Number three, if you are not confident yet in listening to your body and using free tests like the cocal pulse test or the skin sensitivity test to determine food sensitivities, in this case, it would be recommended to use a combination of the MRT LEAP 150 food sensitivity test with a comprehensive GI test like the one by Dr. Stada, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And number four, if you have the funds and you want to monitor yourself as you follow the protocol, from a purely scientific point of view, it's very interesting to observe progress through regular testing. Now let's talk about what tests to use. Many of these tests can be ordered through your family physician. However, your best chance in requesting these tests and having them interpreted well is to order them through a functional practitioner or restorative wellness practitioner, that being a nutritional professional who's received extensive training in functional lab testing. You can contact the restorative wellness office and request a list of graduated practitioners. You can also go to functional diagnostic nutrition and select practitioners to find one near you. And another place to look is Primal Docs, and these are linked within the workbook. Additionally, some tests can be ordered directly through a specialized nutritional therapy practitioner, like the hair tissue mineral analysis test. Consult your physician or nutritional practitioner to find out which tests are right for you. Now, the backbone of functional nutrition testing is a comprehensive stool test. And in this workbook, I've outlined three different options. There's my personal favorite, the Doctor's Data Comprehensive Stool and Parasitology Test times two. This GI test uses two stool samples to test the balance of beneficial bacteria to commensal and pathogenic bacteria. It also detects parasites, fungus, inflammatory markers. It has markers for digestive strength, and also infectious organisms like Giardia, Cryptosporidium, C. difficile, and it also has markers for occult blood and various other markers. There's a link within the workbook to find out more info. Then there's the Diagnostec Comprehensive GI Test. This GI test uses stool samples as well as saliva samples for early immunodetection of parasites and testing of inherited food allergies and sensitivities, as well as fungal dysbiosis, inflammatory markers, pancreatic digestive strength, pathogenic bacteria and infectious organisms, and functional markers, etc. Thirdly, we have the Genova Lab GI Effects Stool Profile, which tests the stool sample using genetic microbiology testing instead of a microscope. DNA analysis of key microbes is done, along with limited testing for parasites and inflammatory markers, SIGA, etc. For better parasite identification, though, choose the add-on that is specific to parasites. There are other non-invasive tests, like the organic acid urine test. This test shows indirectly what pathogenic yeast and bacteria might be living in the gut microflora by measuring the chemicals produced by those microbes, absorbed, and then excreted through the urine. So the The OA test is helpful for testing vitamin and mineral insufficiencies, amino acid insufficiencies, oxidative damage and antioxidant sufficiency markers, detoxification sufficiency, functional markers of B-complex deficiency, neurotransmitter metabolites to assess the central nervous system, mitochondrial energy production assessment, methylation sufficiency status, lipoic acid and CoQ10 sufficiency markers, and dysbiosis markers for bacterial and yeast overgrowth. And within the workbook, of course, there's a link to find out more. Then we have the hair tissue mineral analysis. It's both non-invasive and inexpensive. A sample of your hair is sent to a laboratory where a qualified practitioner interprets the results and can outline a mineral and nutrient balancing protocol. This is helpful for showing mineral levels, including heavy metal levels and more. Testing is usually done several times with some months in between each test. For more information, I have some guest resources by Lydia Shatney and Mary Matukanis. Next, we have 23andMe.com genetic testing. This type of testing will be covered more in depth in Module 4, which will cover the basics of genetics and epigenetics. It's also going to include a quick sheet that will explain why to have genetic testing done, where to send the results, and how to find a practitioner to interpret those results. Adrenal salivary testing. This is something that's common to many labs around the world. I most commonly use Labrix's adrenal salivary panel to see how my clients' adrenals are coping with the stress put on them. Our adrenals are stressed by many things: life stress, emotional stress, food sensitivities, chronic or acute infections, etc. This test is helpful for measuring the pattern of cortisol output throughout the day, as well as our DHEA levels. And other salivary testing can test neurotransmitter levels and other things. Then there's sweat mineral analysis, which is common to many labs. It's helpful for measuring mineral levels, including heavy metal concentration. Then we have the hydrogen and methane breath tests. This test assesses overgrowth of pathogenic bacteria in the gut, specifically where it's not supposed to be. The patient consumes a sugar solution of glucose or lactulose on an empty stomach, and the sugar solution is quickly metabolized by the bacteria in the small intestine, which produces gases that are measurable in the breath by breathing into a special tube. Hydrogen and methane gases are then measured at 2 or 3 hours, with 3 being better, based on the transit time in the small intestine. This is helpful for identifying SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and is also similar to tests for lactose intolerance. Next, we have the gut permeability profile. This test is done by swallowing polyethylene glycol, which contains molecules of different sizes. Over the course of 6 hours, the levels of these molecules are measured in the urine, which shows how damaged the digestive lining is. This is helpful for measuring damage to the gut lining. Then we have the cryptopyrrole's urine test, which is also commonly available. It's helpful for determining if you have pyroluria. So cryptopyrroles are metabolites of abnormal gut flora, and they're relatively harmless in low levels. However, if you have an above average amount that builds up, it can lead to a condition called pyroluria, a familial disorder which occurs with stress. High levels of these pyroles systemically bind with B6 and zinc, preventing the use of these essential nutrients in the brain and the body. Supplementing with magnesium, zinc, B vitamins, and evening primrose oil helps to metabolize the pyroles and balance the condition, and the GAPS protocol can help to fix the problem at the root. Lastly, I want to talk about food sensitivity testing. As a practitioner, I want to make a note that Combining a comprehensive stool test with the MRT LEAP 150 is extremely valuable. For example, you might find from the stool test that you're in need of digestive enzymes, but find out on the food sensitivity panel that you are sensitive to pineapple, papaya, and pork, which are three very common sources for digestive enzyme supplements. So if you were to take that common digestive enzyme, you would daily be causing yourself some source of inflammation or trouble. So Margaret Floyd, NTP and GAPS practitioner and author of Eat Naked and the Eat Naked Foods Cookbook, a colleague and mentor of mine, has written an excellent series of articles on food sensitivities. Her articles explain why the MRT LEAP 150 test is one of the best options for testing most food sensitivities. Although it takes some effort to implement a plan based on the results, I use this with every client I have because the results are so frequently helpful and positive. With her permission, I have linked Margaret's articles in the workbook and provided an excerpt of one of the articles. So there's four parts. Part one is what they actually are. Part two is what are indicative symptoms. And part three is testing for food sensitivities. And then part four is kind of putting it all together. Okay, so let's talk about the LEAP 150 Food Sensitivity Mediator Release Test by Oxford Biomedical, which is helpful for determining food sensitivities using mediator measurement. To quote Margaret, "The last type of test takes the middleman out of the picture. Instead of measuring the mechanism for initiating an adverse reaction to a food, it goes straight to the end result, the release of mediators like histamines, cytokines, and prostaglandins. You see, these guys are responsible for actually causing inflammation in the body. While there are multiple different pathways or mechanisms for triggering the release of these mediators, what's actually important when it comes to determining whether a food causes an adverse reaction or not is whether these mediators are released on exposure to that food. Mediator measuring tests look for this response and thus eliminate one of the critical complicating factors of food sensitivity testing overall." There are three companies that do this type of testing: the ALCAT, the LRA by ELISA ACT, and the MRT Mediator Release Test by Oxford Biomedical. My preferred test by far, and in my opinion the gold standard in the world of food sensitivity testing, is the MRT, and here's why I love it so much. Point one, the MRT tests a wide variety and long list of foods, not just the most common sensitivities. It tests 150 different foods and chemicals, and it's not every food you could possibly eat, but it's a darned good representation. Point two, the MRT recognizes that there are certain chemicals found in some foods, either naturally or added through food processing, that can trigger adverse reactions. They test for these in addition to the foods, which can provide very helpful information about whole categories of food. A good example of this is solanine, the chemical in nightshades like potatoes, eggplant, peppers, and tomatoes, that some people are sensitive to. You'll hear broad recommendations of, oh, don't eat nightshades, they're really inflammatory, but that's not the case for everyone. Testing for a solanine sensitivity will be helpful to know whether nightshades are truly an issue for you or not. Next point, the MRT accounts for shades of gray and shows the degree of sensitivity for each food. This is really helpful when coming up with a diet protocol that addresses these sensitivities. It is over 90% accurate, which is almost unheard of in the world of food sensitivity testing. It's based on physiological principles that are broadly supported in the scientific literature and by published studies. And perhaps most importantly, in my practice, I've seen the best results when working with the results of this particular test. Now, the MRT isn't flawless. It's not 100% accurate, which of course would be ideal but doesn't exist at this point. Further, it won't identify IgE food allergies, the type 1 hypersensitivities, because that response doesn't occur in the blood. But most people know the true food allergies they have. What's more complex and difficult to pinpoint are the food sensitivities, the type 3 and type 4 hypersensitivities that don't involve an IgE immune reaction. So that's a wrap of functional lab tests that I recommend. Your next steps, so if you've been through GAPS and still have issues, these would be the steps to start with. Number one, find a functional practitioner or comparable. See the options outlined in the resources in the workbook. Number two, run a comprehensive stool test and an MRT LEAP-150. Number three, choose other relevant tests as needed, like the hair mineral tissue analysis or the genetic testing. What's next? In Module 3, we will cover the topics of pathogenic infections, such as viral, bacterial, and parasite. Also included will be quick sheets for all three, as well as resources on other things. As far as resources on finding a practitioner for lab testing, please refer to the workbook in Module 2. And that's a wrap. We'll see you next week.